Hey, welcome to the Newsletter Operator Podcast. We're here with Matt Paulson. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Matt?
Thanks for coming on. We appreciate having you. Awesome. Well, tell us, I think a lot of people know you because I've been following you on Twitter for ages, and you're becoming more and more known in the newsletter community and, of course, in other communities as well. Just tell us about who you are and what your business is. We'll get started with that.
Yeah. So my name is Matt Paulson. Been doing the newsletter business long before there was kind of the modern kind of category of newsletters. I started on a financial media business called MarkBeat. We have a very large email component. We have 4.3 million subscribers as of today, and started our email list tail end of 2010, early 2011. Have grown it steadily since then. We've been on the Inc. 5000 list for 8 consecutive years. I think this will be year number 9. So we've just kind of had, you know, slow and steady growth. And if you grow 30% a year and you do it for a decade, you get a pretty large business. So we did about $30 million in revenue last year. We'll do about $40 million this year, I think. January was our best month ever. We did just under $4 million in revenue. So super happy with that. In the last year, we've really doubled down on ad spend to grow our email list. So last month, we spent about $1.2 million on ads to grow the MarkBeat mailing list and some of our different brands that we run. And you know, really happy with how that's turning out. We're breaking even in about 90 days on our ad spend. So obviously I'm just going to keep pressing that button until it breaks, and having a lot of fun doing that. And yeah, I know a stupid amount about email, like stuff that, you know, most people never bother to think about, like, oh, what is the optimal version of the list unsubscribe header to use for which ESP, and, you know, stuff like that. So happy to get into weeds on anything.
Let's do that. And so what I love about you and what a lot of people love about you is you're so open and transparent with all the numbers. And so we want to break all that stuff down and get into it. So let's just start from the top here. So you explained this, but I'm going to run everything through step by step. Or you might have mentioned some of these numbers, but start with, like, how many newsletter subscribers do you have now for MarkBeat? And we'll go from there.
Yeah. So we have 7 or 8 different brands. MarkBeat is the main one, but kind of our other big one is called the Early Bird. That's earlybirdpublishing.com, and dividendstocks.com, insidertrades.com. We're going to launch an earnings focused newsletter next month. You know, we have a crypto newsletter called CryptoBeat. And then we have some lists that we are kind of partners on where we run the newsletter, but then somebody else provides all the leads. Like tickertalk.com is one of those. And altogether, we have about 4.3 million subscribers. We have people that are subscribed to just one of the newsletters. We have people that are subscribed to like 5 or 6 of them, and, you know, trying to build this network of kind of financial media brands. And one thing that we've learned is that, like, our audience, which is kind of older individual investors, they are signed up for a lot of lists. And if they're signed up for 10 lists, I just want to be all 10 of them. So that's why we've launched all these different brands. And that's worked out great as a strategy.
Makes sense. And at this, there's not a lot of newsletters or media companies that are at this scale when it comes to this many subscribers. So that's awesome. Mm-hmm. At this level, what type of open rates and click-through rates are you seeing? And I know it's a little bit, open rates can be deceiving. You've talked a lot about this, but tell us what that looks like for you.
Yep. So when you exclude, you know, the fake Apple and Google opens that are kind of automated, our true open rate is like 21%. When you add the fake ones back in, it's about 40%. So I think, you know, most people that are advertising, you know, 50% open rates on your newsletter, they're not taking out the automated opens from, you know, Apple Mail. So really, I think, like, you take whatever your reported open rate is and you divide it in half, and, like, that's probably your true open rate.
And how many subscribers are you adding from? You said you're spending, or in January, you spent $1.2 million on ads to grow your list. How many is that adding right now?
You know, the lead cost will vary as low as like $2 for like lead share deals up to like probably $12. And, you know, what we're willing to spend per lead is really dependent on like how it backs out. And, as you guys know, like, you know, maybe a subscriber from TikTok is not as valuable as somebody that's going through Google AdWords, landing on a landing page and typing in your email. So, you know, average lead cost is probably, you know, $3. So $1.2 million divided by 3 is 400,000 subscribers. And obviously, like, when you have an email list that big, you get quite a few unsubscribes. So you probably need 100 or 200,000 new subscribers a month just to break even on your list size. So that's kind of the game we're playing.
It's awesome.
And what does the pie chart look like in terms of growth channels? I know you said you spent $1.2 million in January, which is a huge amount. Like, what does that look like spread out across the channels that you're currently running or testing?
Yeah, probably about 200,000 of that's Google, Bing, 50,000 is Facebook. We're trying to grow Facebook more and more. You know, most of it is kind of, you know, the investing industry category really has its own media advertising networks. So like, yes, we do Sparkloop and Google and Bing and Facebook, but the majority of the spend is advertising to different financial investing email lists and co-registration that are on investing specific advertising networks. So like, we've all, you know, anybody who's listening to this podcast has heard of Sparkloop, but you know, maybe they haven't heard of AfterOffers or the co-registration network that Investing Media Solutions runs. And you know, these things have been around a long time, and we've been buying from them for a long time. You know, we've been able to scale those up pretty effectively.
Tell us how that works, because like you said, we don't have any idea about this. I know of AfterOffers. Mm-hmm. That is about all I know about that space. So
yeah,
we could break down a couple. Maybe which one are you, maybe you think is the best that you're spending the most on that would be good to tell listeners about?
I think AfterOffers is a great example. It's run by a couple guys out of San Diego named Tim and Emil Berggren. But like, we've been buying from them since 2014 and like have been buying every month since then. We break even about 60 days from them. I can give you some numbers just for all of last year. So we spent $561,000 with them last month or last year in 2023. And that's generated $1.19 million in revenue from them so far. So, pretty happy with that. And obviously, like, as time goes on, they would just be more and more profitable. It is basically like Sparkloop before Sparkloop was Sparkloop. Like, it's a co-registration network. It's ads that show up on opt-in forms after you sign up for a financial mailing list. Check the box. I get the lead. I pay $3 or whatever and get the sign up.
And so that's something that's different about these two is Sparkloop. Maybe the cost per lead there might be $1 or $2, but you said $3. What's the cost per lead look like on AfterOffers or another courage platform in finance?
It's typically in the investing, it's in that $2 to $3 range. But it's, you're paying for all the leads. It's not like with Sparkloop where you're only paying for leads that meet, you kind of like, we require in Sparkloop, you got to like click the confirmation link to like get paid. Because otherwise, there's just a lot of noise and a lot of junk. But with the investing kind of co-ed stuff, it is, you're paying for that volume. And it is probably more expensive. And the reason it's more expensive is just that's what financial leads cost. And they tend to be, we find that like when we advertise on like an investing website, the lead quality in terms of like how they back out is just much higher quality than like if you're just on like a generic newsletter, running Sparkloop. So we're willing to pay more is what it amounts to.
Interesting. So higher ROAS from AfterOffers than something like Sparkloop.
Yeah. And it's just because it's more targeted. I mean, we do buy Sparkloop. We're very happy with them. Talk to those guys pretty frequently. But it is more, like, just a different thing. It's more general audience. You know, you're not just advertising on investing lists. You're advertising on, you know, tech lists and AI lists and, you know, a variety of different types of things. So you got to account for that and you're kind of, you're tracking a ROAS.
Is there another financial, media solution you can tell us about, another like network or source you're buying a lot from the finance space that most people wouldn't know about?
Yeah. We've been working, you work a lot with agencies. So there's one called NetEffect that we've been working with. It's a gal named Nancy and another gal named Autumn that run it. And they run click to opt-in campaigns for us. So we have these different free reports where it's, here are the 7 best energy stocks to buy in 2024 or something like that. And then people, like, they'll book with different advertising lists, like Zacks.com is one of them, BehindTheMarkets.com is another. So they'll book placements for us against these lists where they're sending a click to opt-in email to their list. Somebody wants the free report, they click on a link in the email, we pay $5 for that lead, and then they land on our website, with the email pass through. So I got the email address, I got them on my website, I'm paying $5. That's worked out great too.
Interesting. you clicked opt-in, is that, what are the CPAs looking like for that? $5 on average, or is there a range?
Yeah, $5 is kind of the common number in the investing industry. Some people try to push that up to $6, $7. Most of the stuff, like we sell quick opt-in stuff, like a ton of it, and that tends to be all in that $5 to $6 range.
Any advice for people who maybe have, they're operating in the finance space and they're looking into to growing from these types of sources or channels for the very first time?
Yeah, so there is a brand called Financial Marketing Summit, and it's like an event you can go to, and they do a few events throughout the year. But they also have a great YouTube channel. A guy named John Knutson does it. So like, go watch all, like if you're in the finance investing space, like just go watch all of John's videos, and like you will see interviews of like everybody who's anything kind of in the investing, you know, marketing world. Like that is the place to go.
I'm going to do that. I was recently introduced to John. I'm in the process of doing that right now myself, actually.
Yeah. So yeah, we just had Financial Marketing Summit last month. Saw a ton of people. Everybody got COVID, but made some great business deals. And love going to that event every year. And I usually speak at it. It is just kind of the place to go for, you know, if you're doing lead gen or, you know, trying to do email signups and invest in space, like that is the place to be.
One more question on channels. Do you know how many, or can you tell us how many paid channels are you running on right now to grow your list?
Yeah, I think the count is 22.
Wow, that's a ton.
Yeah.
You know, me and Ryan used to work at the Hustle together. I think we had like 12
yep.
at our max,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And thankfully, like, it's pretty easy to manage because a lot of it is through agencies. And then some of them are like after offers. Like I set that up 10 years ago and like, yeah, we changed the offer every now and then, but it's really just not a whole lot to do because, you know, the posting is automated. The offer stays the same. Billing's automated. They take the money out of our account every week. And, you know, we look at the performance, but that's really all we do on a monthly basis. So it's very manageable. Like right now, we don't even have a director of marketing. We had an advertising manager that left for another job. And so like right now, it's just me and another guy named Will kind of doing it. And it is less work than you'd think it would be.
Interesting. And I imagine this level, is it like 99% of your subscribers are coming from paid, or is it somewhere around there, pay free to pay ratio?
Well, yeah, it's probably like 90%, or it's 80 to 90. We're probably getting 40, 50,000 organic opt-ins a month. So compare, you know, out of 400. So like
that's really good. I forgot you have a lot of SEO traffic. I forgot about that.
Yeah, we rank for a lot of stock tickers and then like a lot of tools. So like our biggest keyword is dividend calculator. So you search dividend calculator, like you get a ton of traffic just from that keyword. But like in 2021, like when everyone was freaking out about GameStop and AMC, like we ranked for like GameStop short interest and AMC short interest. So MarketBeat was all over Reddit when that was going on, and just a ton of search traffic from stuff like that. Whereas they're like keywords that you don't really think about, but then like when something blows up, like there we are waiting. Just get a ton of traffic.
You mentioned that you're using kind of these lead magnets for the click to opt-in. Is there a formula that you use to generate these kind of lead magnets, or anything that you found to be really successful in driving growth over time and experimentation?
Yeah, they tend to be like stock lists. So like whatever the hot thing is. So it's like, you know, last year was AI stocks. So it's like 7 AI stocks to own in 2024. And then, you know, whatever the hot thing will change, right? Like it was electric vehicles at one point. It was marijuana stocks at one point. And just kind of like this year, it'll be all election-based stuff. Like if you can like write an election kind of driven narrative, like for like a report, like an opt-in to your newsletter, like those have gotten really high engagement this year. So like in a financial publishing space, like people are selling like newsletter subscriptions, right? And they tend to be $79 entry-level price points. We sold 3,000 subscriptions for this group called the Freeport Society. That's part of Investor Place Media, which is part of MarketWise. It's a public company last month. And their whole narrative is that like, that Biden's going to like get removed from the ticket and Gavin Newsom's going to be the Democratic nominee. And like, he's going to try to make the whole country like California. And then that's bad. Here's why. And like, we're making this organization to, for people that want to buck this trend and really want to like understand, like, here's where politics in America are going and like, here's how to trade based off of that. And like the offer just totally crushed it. And we saw that it was doing well. So we just set the heck out of it and sold 3,000 subscriptions at like $150 or $200 CPA, something like that, last month, and made a boatload of money promoting that.
Yeah, I think
what
I saw
that. What do you mean by that CPA? What does CPA mean in that context?
Cost per acquisition. So typically, you know, there's two big companies in the financial publishing industry. There is MarketWise, public company, MKTW, run by Porter Sansbury, who's kind of an industry legend. Like we named a conference room in our office after Porter because he's like that big of a deal. And then there's Agora, which is kind of the, you know, has been around forever. Bill Bonner started that in 70s, 80s. They were always the biggest kind of direct response subscription organization, and they're, you know, still around. They run this brand called the Oxford Club. So like they're the two kind of big players in that space, and they sell all of these kind of niche, they're effectively newsletters or memberships to different newsletters. And the entry kind of price point on all of them is anywhere between like $49 and $99. And then they'll pay like $100 CPA on the low end and $250 CPA on the high end. And then they have all these big back end kind of upsells behind them, just like different tiers of their membership. So they're willing to, you know, pretty common numbers are like $79 checkout price is kind of the base. And then they'll pay us $150 CPA on that for that sale.
Interest. Yeah, that's what I wanted to get to. It's like, that's the CPA is what they're paying you when you drive that sale.
Correct.
Which is really interesting. They're willing to pay more because they make more money in the back end, like you explained. And that's, I want to dive into that because I think I've been fascinated by the financial newsletter industry, financial marketing industry. There's not a lot of information out there about it. And so I'm glad you broke down like a little bit about that, those two companies. If someone's listening to this for the first time and like they're interested in newsletters, but most of them have no idea about this stuff, what other things should they check out to just understand the basics of these companies? And also, can you give us some sense of scale? Like, how big is MarketWise? How big is Agora? Why are these companies interesting?
You know, together, I think they're probably about $1 billion in revenue right now. So if you look, MarketWise is, you know, financials are public because they're a public company. Trailing 12 months, they've done about $500 million from what I can tell. And I think Agora is very similar. And then there's a bunch of independents like beyond that. Like there's one guy who has a crypto offer where like his kind of front end, like his teaser is like, if you complete my survey, I'll give you $10 in Bitcoin or something like that. And, you know, we probably generate like 30, 40 grand a month for him in affiliate commissions. So like it is like there's kind of the two big companies at the top, but then like there's this whole universe of smaller companies, and we try to work with all of them because we've got, you know, we think that audience is like 15 million people and we've got 4 million of them on our list. I've completely lost the question.
That's the type of stuff I'm looking for. So that's the TAM of this. Yeah. Any follow-up questions on that, Ryan? There's a lot to learn from these companies, how they do marketing, like how they have front and back end offers, all those different types of stuff.
And like some of
them, there's a lot of places to learn about it.
Go sign up for these lists and see what they're doing, and like buy the product for $79 and see what the upsells are. Like, I mean, I learned so much just by like buying products that people are selling and like seeing how they market them.
That is the way, reverse engineering.
I'm curious. I just wanted to dig in more. You mentioned there's like an individual who, did you say he's making 30 to 40,000 a month via his crypto offer via your guys' affiliate? Is that how I got a little mixed?
No, like there. He's paying us that much to promote his offer.
Got it. Awesome. Yeah, I went through your funnel. I saw the Joe Biden or the election kind of like lead magnet guide that was in there. And I saw a bunch of others in there as well. I know we've talked a little bit about growth, and I'm sure we'll dive more into that. I'm curious, again, from a kind of pie chart perspective, how does MarketBeat make money? And you know, what are the different, I saw there's a premium subscription side. I'm curious how, what kind of piece of the pie that makes up. Maybe you could just paint high level view of that.
Yeah. So we're a media company. Most of our revenue is advertising. So last year of our 29 point whatever million in revenue, like 90% of that was advertising and about 10% was subscriptions. So we have right now, it's about 13,000 people that are have a recurring MarketBeat All Access subscription. And, the list price is kind of $400, but, you know, it's pretty frequent that, like, we sell for either $100 or $200 the first year. And, like, the offer that works really well to promote that is, like, we give people, we'll do a promotion and say, hey, we applied a $300, credit to your account for MarketBeat All Access. It's good for a week. If you want to claim, your account credit, click here, to get it. And then, you create the urgency and then tell people, your account credit's about to expire. Do you want to use it or not? Like, hey, a bunch of other people use their credit. Tomorrow's the last day to do it. Today's the last day to do it. And, that sense of urgency, really works to, get signups.
Tell us, how do these advertising deals work? We've talked about this on other podcasts. It's different than a lot of what other media companies are doing. I don't think you're selling a lot of flat fee sponsorships according to what you said. So how do sponsorships work in your universe and what's worked for you?
Yeah. So historically, the financial publishing industry, initially it was CPM based, but it moved in about 2015, it moved to CPC. And really in the last two or three years, it's moved all to CPA, where it's really based off the transactions that you generate. We do have some flat fee stuff. And that is primarily when we do IR work, which is promotions for public companies that are looking to promote kind of their stock. So there are these IR firms that will create content about a stock that's, public, NASDAQ listed company. And then they'll pay us to drive traffic to kind of their landing page for a stock. And that, there's a lot of legal stuff and compliance stuff that goes into that. If you are promoting a stock and you're getting paid to do it, and you don't disclose it, that's obviously super illegal and people get busted for it all the time. So it's kind of considered more of a, I don't say shady kind of thing, but it's, you got to have your ducks in a row on it. And there are plenty of people that want to try to skirt through rules and people will try to wire money to you from Canadian law firms. So you can't track where the money came from. So you got to be really careful on that. So those are all flat fee stuff, paid in advance. And you got to know who the person is. And typically we only deal with people oh, I've met Joe in person. He's a real person. I know who he is. Cause, there's a lot of shady behavior that happens in that category.
What do CPMs for those kind of sponsorships look like? Just out of curiosity. I know that's something Matt and I have talked about in the past.
It's a really interesting space that we don't know much about. Yeah. Tell us.
Typically when we send a mailing to something like that, go to a segment of about a million people. So that'd be the 30-day opens for one of our mailing lists. And they pay, I think, $15,000. So is that a $15 RPM?
Yeah. And I'm not going to do the math, but I think that sounds about right. Yeah. And do you have to, when you do one of these IR sponsorships, at least I've seen some people do this, I think they have to disclose what they got paid for the sponsorship. Is that right? Or am I way off base on that?
Yeah. And it's usually varied in a disclaimer, on the bottom of the email. Yeah, it's who paid you, what do they pay you, and we have a standard disclaimer we use when we send those out.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've heard from other people that they like these types of advertisers because they can't really measure results. It's who knows if someone went and bought the stock or not. I mean, that's the result they want, but you can't measure that. And so, some people...
You can see the stock volume go up when... Yeah. I mean, the people, we don't ever work directly with public companies. We always work with these agencies that would run IR campaigns or buying media from us in a bunch of different places. And, they do a good job of all the compliance stuff. And I know what they look for is time on site, number of pages visited. And did this person actually research the stock and stick around a little while? So those are kind of the metrics that they use.
That's cool. So they go to you track people going to MarketBeat's ticker page to check out the stock on your website? Is that what you're tracking?
So typically, they've got their own website, and then they have this big landing page about stock with a bunch of information about it. So they want us to drive traffic to their website, and then what is the time on site for the traffic we send? How long on average did somebody stay on the site? Did I send a bunch of people and then they bounced right away, or did they stay on the site for 5-10 minutes? And that's kind of what they're looking for.
That's cool. So it's a lot more sophisticated than I would have heard about. So I'm glad we dove into that.
And if they do a big IR campaign with MarketBeat and the trading volume on a stock is like totally like unchanged. So like to them, it didn't work. But if it did change, it worked.
Okay. And I don't know if you mentioned this, but IR is investor relations, if people didn't know what that meant. I forget if we said that or not. But that sounds like that's a fraction of your sponsors, Matt. Is that like a smaller percentage, the type of advertisers you work with? Yeah. Tell us what, so the main one are these financial newsletter companies like MoneyWise and Agora. And then you work with those, do you work with those on a CPA deal? So you have an offer and you get paid when someone purchases that offer, that product, right?
Yeah, most of them are these boutique financial newsletter and membership operators where, they've got a membership, maybe it's $100 a year, and then you get their content and whatever else with it. Then we get a CBA based off of it. That is probably, it's definitely our largest bucket, but I don't think I could throw a percentage on it accurately.
Yeah. And do you get, are the CPAs, like you mentioned before, is it usually above the front-end offer price? So if the front-end offer costs $79 per year, are you getting paid $100, $150, $250 sometimes to sell that product?
Yep.
That is cool. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So like when, insurance people and savings account people like will email us all the time and say like, or even different affiliate offers in different categories that says like, oh, we'll give you 30% or whatever you sell. It's like, man, I just don't really care because I'm getting 200% of what I sell over here.
I was wondering, like, when I listen to interviews before, I'm like, how is Matt building this business based off of just these like affiliate deals essentially? But because they're structured this way, it's an awesome deal for you. And I didn't realize that until this call. That's great.
Yeah. But I mean, it's an awesome deal for us, but like, these are not dumb people throwing money, like just at advertising. They're like, they know what they're doing. Like if they're giving me, $150, they're making probably $500 on average on that transaction. So like, they're sophisticated buyers.
Tell us how they're making that money on the back end though. Can you break that down for us?
Yeah. So typically like, there's like any kind of membership thing, there's like an ascension ladder of like, there's the entry level price and then there's like the core offer. So like first price might be $79 and then maybe like a $300 offer and then might be a $2,000 offer. And then these things tend to cap out like for, $10,000 or $20,000, like where you can go to their annual event and you can go meet, the experts in person and, maybe they do coaching or, you get access to whatever. You can, go to like membership meetup events. And like, there are people that have like been Stansberry, like Stansberry is one of the brands that, I guess Porter Stansberry started a long time ago, but like Stansberry Alliance is like, I don't know what it costs, 10, 20 grand. But like the people that like love it. And, it's kind of, always becomes like, a lot of membership things becomes an identity thing where it's like, that's kind of partially how you identify yourself is like, I love this content. I believe in how these people think. I invest in how they teach. And some of these things get really, really popular.
What does your funnel to these affiliate placements look like? Like what are the highest volume placements? I noticed you have a lot of plugs in the actual sign up funnel for MarketBeat itself, but curious like what the highest volume placements and funnels look like.
Yeah, the co-registration stuff, kind of our sign-up funnel, is a smaller and smaller part of our revenue every year. We think co-reg as a category, I mean, like SparkLoop is kind of a different thing, but like classic co-reg is kind of maybe dying as a category. So that's just less and less valuable every year. Where we're seeing a ton of volume is on what we call our triggered campaign system. So when we send out a newsletter, if somebody opens, we'll send them an ad email right away because we know they're in their inbox. So it's best time to send an email. Those emails get like a 60% open rate. Or if you click on an ad, or like if you click on a text, or if you visit the website, like whenever somebody like we know is active, we just send them the next offer at our queue. And then we kind of sort this offer queue based off like which ones are like generating the most money in the last 7 days. So like any given time, we have like 200 emails in our what we call our triggered campaign system. And then they get sorted by performance. Like we know like, today this ad from Porter and Company is doing the best. So somebody, gets our article, they open it and we send them that ad. It's like the next one in the queue. And there's a ton of volume there. And we make a ton of money because we if everybody's getting different offers, you get really good information on which ones are performing the best right now, and then you can focus on the offers that are doing great.
And in this trigger campaign, when I open one of MarketBeat's email and then I get a trigger email, does that trigger email come from, like, is the send name MarketBeat or is the send name the advertiser for that? Or does it vary? Like, is there any best practices you found about who that email comes from or the branding around that trigger email?
Yeah, it varies a lot. Sometimes it's like from MarketBeat. Sometimes it's from like the advertiser name and MarketBeat. Sometimes it might just be like the name of the expert, like Porter Stansberry via MarketBeat. We do vary it a lot. I think I don't have the data to back it up, but I think, I think when all of your emails look the same, people can become blind to them. So if you vary them, I think that tends to be a better way to go.
Interesting.
From a copy perspective, like, I'm sure you've done tons and tons of testing and experimentation on what's going to convert in the inbox. Like, what are some frameworks or lessons that you've learned in converting to these affiliate offers via these email campaigns?
Yeah, generally the trend is always, and it's always been this way, but like our data has really shown it in the last couple of years, is that, email from people tends to do better. Shorter subject lines tend to do better. And then really just kind of, it's kind of the standard AIDA attention, interest, desire, action formula of like, you want to write something that's interesting and then you want to, create a desire and get them to perform an action. Like it's not rocket science. And, more and more like what's working are these like really short kind of teaser emails where it's maybe 5-6 sentences of text and then like a click here to learn more link. Like those tended to have done really well lately.
Are you getting, do you have an in-house copywriter or are you getting some copy and creative from the advertiser for these trigger emails?
Yeah, typically they provide the copy. So like they will all employ copywriters and then they'll give us a bunch of different copy to test. And then we'll like after, a few days, like we'll turn off the copy that isn't performing well, then leave the copy on that's performing well. And, every month they tend to get swapped out with something new just so that you're not getting the same emails over and over again.
Any other types of, or go ahead, I don't want to interrupt you, but if there's any other types of email campaigns that drive a lot of revenue, that would be interesting to hear about too. So outside of the trigger campaigns.
Yeah, what we're doing more and more is like kind of our main emails to our list are just content emails of like a new story that one of our writers wrote about some stock. Like we had an NVIDIA, NVIDIA has been super hot the last year, so we write about it often. We might send out like a stock analysis on NVIDIA that has some ads in it by itself, but then when you open it, it gets, there's a trigger that gets triggered too. That's where most of the money is right now. Oh, the other interesting thing with our triggered system is like if they're on our SMS list, we will also trigger an SMS. If they signed up for browser notifications, we'll trigger a browser notification. And then if they're on our website, we'll trigger a pop-up on their next page view. So you can really kind of, when you know somebody's paying attention, you can make sure they get the message by sending the message in more than one different channel at the same time.
Wow. What do you use for this tool? So you mentioned like for your email provider, it's a lot of custom stuff and SendGrid is what it's built on. What about what do you use from SMS? And is there any tool that you use for like this pop-up and like integrating all this stuff together? Any software for this?
Yeah, that's all custom code. We use Twilio for SMS. We have a short code. Super happy with Twilio. It's expensive, but I think with that stuff, you get what you pay for. We've been building on this ad server system we have for the last 12 years and have just made it better and better. And like, I could never sell it as a product because it's all tailored for us, but somebody should go build that product.
Well, if you ever sell it, let us know. If you're sold as a product, let us know. I think that'll be really cool. SMS messages, what do those look like?
Before we get to that, there is a company called Inbox Mailers that does something kind of like what we do at Trigger Campaign. So like, if somebody wants an out-of-the-box solution, it's run by a company called BeatMark, but it does something very similar, and it's a product that you can go buy.
That's good to know. Thank you. Mm-hmm. What does the SMS copy look like for these trigger offers?
It's kind of like any email subject line. Yeah, I mean, it's basically the subject line of an email, same kind of stuff. Like, you know, it's either like 10 best stocks by now, like you're not going to believe what Biden's going to do to the stock market, you're not going to believe what Biden, you know, Trump's going to do to the stock market. Anything that is kind of relevant, and then we think somebody would get to click. They are really just kind of H1 tags or titles. They're not like conversational.
Okay, yeah. So teasers that are going to be able to click and go to the offer and then watch the video, yeah. Read the sales message on that page.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, like, I mean, it's not just ads. Like, people can get SMS alerts for us. So, like, if you text, it's 68285, like, that's our short code. Like, people sign up for that. Like, you can, like reply to us and say, follow Apple stock, and you get alerts about Apple, or follow Microsoft and, you know, get news alerts about those companies. So a lot of people really like those.
Do you know how many emails you're sending per day on average, maybe even without the trigger or with the trigger? What does that look like for you?
It's a lot. I probably don't want to say it on a podcast.
All good. Let's see here. What else would be cool to cover? And there's, I'm so glad we got in the weeds. I know this is not super exciting to the average person, but I think someone who's doing this at a high level is going to love this.
I do have a question, I guess, and this might pertain to a large portion of the audience as well. You put out a tweet earlier, I think today, actually, saying the ultimate downfall of the newer generation of newsletter operators will be that they are optimizing for the wrong things. List size, opens, clicks, they're the wrong metrics. The only metric your email list should optimize for is sales. And yeah, I think that's something that Matt and I have spoken a lot about as well. Would love to get kind of an expanded take on that. Like, I know you've obviously been in the email business for a lot longer than most that are operating today. Yeah, I'd just love your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So a lot of the big name newsletters that are popular right now, you know, they all monetize with ads, right? They're selling brand deals for, you know, their newsletter. And ultimately, if you are that brand buying that ad, like, it only makes sense for you to keep doing it if somebody is like ultimately buying something from you at the end of the day. And if you're buying these ads and you're not getting anything from it, like, ultimately you're going to stop buying them. And I think, like, there's just a lot of money that's been flowing into the newsletter space. There's still a lot of VC funded companies that are sitting on some cash, and maybe they're, you know, not playing super tight on where they're spending their advertising revenue. And I don't know if it's me being a pessimist, but I don't want to say the word bubble, but it feels like people are paying unsustainably high rates for these ads and for signups to places like Sparkloop. Yeah, it feels, I don't say it's bubble, but it feels very bubbly to me. And, like, you know, if you're like paying a dollar or two for a signup on Facebook ads or TikTok, like, is that really worth $50 CPM to an advertiser, like, for real? Like, I just not sure that I buy that, because for like great audiences are really expensive to acquire, and if you're not paying anything for them, they're probably not a great audience.
For newsletter operators that, like, that might resonate with, do you have advice for better optimizing for metrics? I mean, how would you, if you're somebody who's been building a list, maybe you say you've got a list of like 10,000 people, maybe you've got a list of like 5,000 people, like, how can you set yourself apart and not become part of this, you know, whether it's a bubble or not, this big kind of trend towards the wrong metrics?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a lot about how you build your list. So, like, if you're going to buy Facebook ads, like, US Canada only, 21 plus, and then, you know, somebody that's in your interest segment. So that way, you know, like, they are like an adult in a developed country that can actually buy a product. So, like, definitely do that for sure. You know, and then, like, I think it's probably smart, like if you can get the brand ads, like, go for it. Like, I'd love to get a $50 CPM from some big brand, but when those aren't available and, like, nobody has 100% fill, like, go promote some affiliate offers and see if you actually generate transactions. Like, if you can, like, I don't know, obviously it will depend on what category you're in, but, like, if you can send out an Amazon link and, like, nobody buys anything, like, from it, like, how much value really is there with your list? And there was a tweet, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago where, like, somebody's like, well, it was like a Beehive list, and Morning Brew offered to, like, sponsor the list for, you know, a dollar amount. And, you know, the argument was like, oh, I would never take this offer, this $1,000 from Morning Brew, because like my newsletter is worth way more than that. It's like really, is it though? Like maybe it's not actually worth it. Like, you know, if I'm Morning Brew, like I can only pay a certain dollar amount for a subscriber that's going to buy something. Like, you know, they're probably, you know, paying, you know, offering you the right number. It's just maybe you think your audience is more valuable than it actually is.
There's a lot of that thought process by people who think they're like too good for certain advertisers when they really just need to fill inventory. When we talk to high-level operators, they're just about filling inventory, generating revenue, not worried about all this other stuff. Matt, tell us, like, if we're looking for affiliate, this is basic, but if we're looking for affiliate offers, and it depends on the niche, of course, where would people find stuff like that if they have a small audience?
Yeah. You know, ClickBank is kind of the old standard one. They've gotten a lot more legit in the last several years. There's a bunch of them. Like, there's Flex Offers, there's Commission Junction. You know, there's a whole bunch of them out there. You know, do the Amazon affiliate program. But, I mean, really the way that I would think about it is like, okay, who is my audience? Like, what's the demographic? How old are they? What gender are they? What are their interests? What products, you know, are they likely to buy? And then, like, Google, like, well, if my audience is like women and they're like 30 and like maybe they're interested in hair care products and like, okay, what's a good one? And like, go find an affiliate program for that based off your demo and like, try it out.
Are there any in the finance space? Are there any affiliate networks in the finance space that are worth looking at? Or is it all like custom deals that are one-on-one relationships?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few. They tend to be very relationship-based. StrikePoint out of San Diego is one. StrikePoint Media, Investing Media Solutions out of Chicago. Like, go get it. Like, if you got 50,000 subscribers in the investing space, like, go get either of them up. Like, they'll be happy to work with you.
What do you think about, and this is again from the beginner perspective, monetizing with advertising, whether it's CPA or flat fee, versus selling your own product, like a subscription like you have with MarketBeat All Access? How do you think about that, and how should younger operators think about sponsorships versus own products, or both?
I kind of, you know, the big thing to think about that is like, how often does somebody really want to hear about your product? Like, if you only have one product to sell, like, do people really want to hear about it all, you know, every time you email them? I think the answer is no. So I think you want a mix of like your own products and probably more than one, but then, you know, a mix of, you know, advertising stuff too, mostly because people just, they don't want to hear about your thing all, you know, every time you email them, right? Maybe they want to hear about something else. Because there's like, as you email about any offer more and more, like there's diminishing returns to it. So I think you just want to mix.
And what have you had success with? So you have the membership or the subscription, All Access. Mm-hmm. What type of features are in that? And then are there any other own products that you've had success with? I know the main thing is advertising, but what does it look like for you?
Yeah, we used to have tiers. So we used to have a premium newsletter called MarketBeat Daily Premium. And then we had a software thing called RatingsDB. And then like we had kind of a, you know, MarketBeat All Access was like those two things combined. And for our audience, it just kind of got confusing. And then for a while, we were good, better, best, and now we are like free or paid, and that's it. And that's really reduced the confusion with our audience. What you get with it, you can go to the landing page and check it out, but you get access to a bunch of tools and stock lists and premium content. You get our premium newsletter. There's a whole bunch of stuff you get along with it, like, you know, websites ad free. You get like better customer support. You know, just a bunch of stuff.
I know you mentioned a little earlier. Could you just repeat how many premium subscribers or All Access subscribers there are currently?
Yeah, we're about 13,000 right now.
And the price point seems to vary depending on what you got going on. But what's like the average price point? Is it $99, $200?
That's probably about $200 a year.
And for these types of subscriptions, what type of price point do you think people should price their subscription at? Whether it's a paid newsletter, or I know this is a lot different than the average pays newsletter, but what type of price point should people think about?
Yeah, I think it's going to vary depending on industry. And I think the way to figure that out is just one, see what other people in your category are selling them for. I think the way to do it is to have your list price a little bit higher and then discount Like it's much easier to lower a price than it is to raise price. So like if you think the sweet spot is $150 a year, maybe you start at $300 and maybe everybody gets the $150 a year deal, like for the most part. People love like time limited discounts are like a great way to get people over at the finish line to buy. And like I wish it wasn't that way. And you know, it feels kind of like not shady, but like, man, I wish I didn't have to do that. But like to get people over the finish line to buy, like you need to give them a reason to do it today.
That makes sense. And I've seen a lot of people have these kind of recurring discounts that go on indefinitely, essentially. Like the Motley Fool has one yep. all the time. So it's pretty yeah. normal.
So Motley Fool spends $40 million bucks a year on ads. They know what they're doing.
Wow.
That's a great company.
Yeah. That's one I want to learn more about too. And again, there's not a lot of resources out there. Mm-hmm. Any fun facts about the Motley Fool that you can share that come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, they were Market Beat before Market Beat was Market Beat. Like, they've been around since 80s or 90s. And I don't know. Like, they've done a really good job of, like, they kind of have their core kind of stock picking stock idea service. But then they've done a good job of kind of building that ascension ladder where, like, you can hire a full financial advisor. Or maybe if you're younger and you're not quite ready to sign up for the service yet, like, they have what they call the Ascent, where that's kind of their portal for credit cards and savings accounts. And they've done a good job of diversifying and like having something for everybody. And I really appreciate that about them.
Yeah, they're a great example of like a value ladder. Even if you look at like their main website, you can see like the, you know, three main offers and there's many more like you talked about. That's really cool. I got one kind of out of the box question for you. I've talked to a couple people that know you somewhat well, and they just kind of view as kind of like a growth hacker, someone who kind of can break and bend marketing channels. Are there any fun examples in the past or recently where you've found a arbitrage opportunity or growth hack that worked or pushed a channel to its limits?
So did our mutual friend Perrin tell you about our Google News thing?
He didn't tell me any details. He just mentioned kind of channel breaker.
So about 10 years ago, we were like 1/3 of the search results in Google Finance. That was a lot of fun.
That's a big percentage.
So in 2010, we kind of pioneered the idea of data-driven financial content, where we took kind of a template and used structured financial data to create an article. So like when a company announces their quarterly earnings, for example, like there's a ton of data, and you can just kind of use a fill-in-the-blank thing of like Microsoft announced their earnings today. The analyst forecast was 40 cents per share, and then you fill in 40 cents. The actual number was this number. And, you know, they beat it by this number. Then, you know, we had this, you know, big elaborate way to generate these articles. So we could do hundreds of them per day. And then we did it on a bunch of different financial sites. And then they'd get picked up in like Google Finance and Yahoo Finance and MSN Money. And, you know, got a ton of traffic from those. And that's really how we built the list initially, was like getting a ton of traffic from kind of the finance vertical search engines onto the website. You know, there'd be an article about Microsoft, and then a pop-up would show up like, hey, do you want Microsoft news sent to your inbox every day? Type in your email and we'll send it to you. And like that worked great forever.
That's cool. Do you have any idea of like at the peak, what type of traffic you were getting from these articles?
Yeah, it was probably 150,000 hits a day from it.
Wow. That's huge, especially how high intent that traffic is. You know, it's not the average.
Visitor. We still run websites that have this content. Like if you go to AmericanBankingNews.com, you can see some of them in action. And like, you know, there for a while Google had really clamped down on that kind of content, and like, you know, they probably don't want it anymore, which is fine. But it still gets some traffic from Bing and some other places, so we kind of keep them up and keep the thing rolling along.
That leads to one more question on that. Is there any opportunities you see now, like underpriced attention that you see now that people should look out for? It's a tough question.
Maybe Twitter ads. But my whole thing is like, I just want to get really good at knowing the ROI on, you know, the leads or signups we're buying so that I can pay more than anybody else can pay. Like, I'm not looking for cheap leads. I'm looking to maximize revenue so that I can pay more and outbid everybody.
that is the smart way to do it. Dan Kennedy quote, whoever can pay the most to acquire a customer wins. Any other stuff that we should ask you, Matt, or stuff that you want to talk to newsletter operators about?
I did write a book about email marketing. If you want to check it out, it's Email Marketing Demystified on Amazon, myemailmarketingbook.com. I will make a whopping 99 cents if you buy it. So that's me cashing in.
I will check that out. I think this is on my list to read. And you know this stuff better than anybody out there. So I'm excited to check that out. Where can people find you on social or like website, stuff like that? If they want to learn more about you and MarketBee, where do they go?
Yeah. I'm really active on Twitter. It's at Matt Paulson SD is my Twitter handle. I publish a quarterly kind of personal update on my website at mattpaulson.com, MattPaulson.com, and then MarketBeat is just MarketBeat.com.
Sounds good. You're a great follow on Twitter, so I highly recommend that. Thanks for coming on, Matt. I appreciate it. This was really fun.
Yeah, great to be on here.